Hi, everyone. This is Melanie Cutting speaking to you from scenic downtown Lennoxville. I'm one of the three coordinators, along with Jan Draper and Etienne Demang, of the Townshipers Association English Writing Project called Right Here, Right Now. Our primary goal is to help townshipers learn how to effectively express their thoughts in writing, in both fiction, such as short stories, and nonfiction, articles, memoirs, opinion pieces, formats. We encourage them in reaching this goal through participation in a series of workshops to help fine-tune their writing skills with the help of a veteran English teacher, Jan Draper, and experienced writing workshop leaders, Etienne and myself. Another goal is to give our workshop participants, at least those who are interested, the opportunity to see their efforts in print and or read their works on the radio. To this end, we have arranged for CJMQ Community Radio in Lennoxville to host just such a program. So I'll now turn the mic over to Maureen Dillon Teasdale to introduce one of our Right Here, Right Now participants who will read from a selection of their writings. Take it away, Maureen.
CJMQ 88.9 FM, better known as The Cube. I'm Maureen Dillon Teasdale, and today in the booth we have John LeBaron. Now, John is from the writing group here in the townships, and it's called Right Here, Right Now. So welcome, John.
Thank you.
And before you read your work, we're going to have you tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. I grew up in Sherbrooke, and I left Sherbrooke at age 14, basically, to go to a residential school in Massachusetts, and I've pretty much been away from the Eastern Township since then, except for the occasional trip back. Since 2002, my wife and I come back every summer for 3 or 4 months. We live in North Hatley on the main street, and love it here, always have. I consider myself an Eastern Townshipper, and have since I can first start remembering. And so that's where I'm from. My career has mainly been in education. I've taught school from middle school through advanced graduate studies, where my career ended up. My most recent job, from which I retired 8 years ago, I think it is, was at the University of North Carolina in their westernmost campus in the Great Smoky Mountains, beautiful part of the country. So that's who I am and where I've been recently. I've had other odd jobs in industry and consulting, but basically I've told you, what I've done professionally.
Okay, and you have a little bit of writing experience in your background too, which I found was very interesting.
Yes, most of my writing has been of the academic variety, articles for scholarly journals, research journals. I have either written, co-written, or edited several academic books, all of which have to do more or less with the use of technology in education. So I guess I would call myself an educational technologist foremost, but I've written in other areas as well. I've had a couple of stories published in the Toronto Globe and Mail, one very recently, this past August, 2018. And the other one was probably 5 or 6 years ago. It was during the NHL strike year, and I wrote an article about hockey in Finland, especially a particular game when the Finnish team played a traveling Canadian team, and how that elicited different reactions from me and my wife versus the other 8,000 people in the stands. I've dabbled around at writing that I try to make humorous. It's not for me to judge whether it's funny or not, but that's what I've been messing around with in the past 10 years or so since I left my professorship at UNC.
Okay, that's quite an honor, actually. A lot of people would like to have their works published, but haven't, so that's quite a feat. Now, why did you get involved with the group Right Here, Right Now?
Well, I'll just backtrack for a second.
Sure.
For those who would like to be published in the Globe and Mail, there is nothing more to do but to try. And if it doesn't get published the first time, try again. So I said that I'd had 2 published, but I probably have submitted 10. And that means my batting average is 200, and I'm happy with that. But I wouldn't have gotten to 200 unless I'd tried for 1,000.
That's very true. Good advice. So you're in the group right here, right now, and you have a story?
I do.
Okay. Would you like to tell us the story, read the story?
Okay. This is a story about my mother, actually, which might prompt you to turn the dial immediately, but stay with it for a bit and see if you like it. The story is entitled, You Left Her Where? And it takes place in North Hadley. It is, I would call it, embellished truth. As sand courses through an hourglass, each one of us inevitably grows into a certain age. One day, my mother, by then so certain that she was paying full price for it, was spirited away from North Hatley's Connaught Nursing Home in an enormous blue Oldsmobile sedan the size of Saskatchewan. The day is etched indelibly in the village's collective memory. While it still operated as a senior residence, the Connaught was a caring, compassionate facility. When more certain residents were urged to venture outdoors, those very certain folks were often released under the care of other, less certain residents who were nonetheless more certain to find their way home. So it was when my mum's kindly roommate, Maisie she was, as sweet and gentle a lady as you'd ever care to meet, took Mum shopping on foot to Joey's grocery store, a short meander from the residence. Joey's store features an airy front porch with a bench that surveys the bustling Main Street scene. Because the early spring day was uncharacteristically sunny and warm, Maisie suggested that Mum take a short siesta on the bench while she dashed inside to stock up on a few items.
"Why, yes," declared my mother, as she eased comfortably onto the bench. "That would be just fine."
Just a few seconds later, her unfailingly courteous brother-in-law and my Uncle George emerged from the store on the way to his mammoth blue Oldsmobile, wedged awkwardly into the four available remaining parking spaces. "Why, hello, Anne. Nice to see you," he effused warmly. "Would you care to join me for a cup of tea?"
"Why, yes, George, that would be just fine," affirmed my mother.
Off she tooted with George, looking for all the world like Cleopatra on Geritol. Mum settled snugly onto a plush passenger seat of her blue river barge, gliding elegantly along Main Street, away from Joey's store. Now, George was not quite as certain in his life as Mum was in hers, but he was daily becoming ever more certain. Always large in spirit, but not particularly in physical stature, George had begun to collapse into his own frame. While driving his merry Oldsmobile, he was neither visible to passers-by through the windshield nor through the side windows. Pedestrians could only see a pair of hairy white knuckles clamped to the top of the steering wheel. After a wobbly three-point turn, George and Mum inched toward the village center, past the Connaught home, in front of a white auberge now called La Chocolatière, the village dépanneur, and a tiny brown former United Church across the street from the lakefront Dreamland Park. I can still conjure up the vicarious sensation of Maisie's blood freezing, droplet by droplet, when she exited Joey's store, noting the empty bench where my mother so recently sat. At first, she thought Mum had simply taken a short stroll, so Maisie repeatedly called her name, louder and louder each time. Yielding no response, she darted back to the store, hailing my mother upstairs and down, and at the head of every aisle, only to encounter silence and quizzical glances. She asked the butcher, the shelf stalkers, the checkout lady, and Joy herself. No luck. So you can imagine Maisie's horror. A buzz of growing concern arose among the customers and the employees of the store. This foreboding sense of urgency soon spilled out into the parking lot. Calls for eyewitnesses were broadcast up and down Main Street. Unfortunately, nobody had seen the giant blue Oldsmobile pulling away. Eventually, an elderly gentleman's voice cried out from the back, "I ain't seen no blue car, but I seen some hairy white knuckles gripping a steering wheel just to the left of a blue-haired lady gliding along the street just like the Queen of Sheba. I'd recognize them white knuckles anywhere. They belong to George." No last names were needed. Those disembodied white knuckles had long become a significant facet of town lore. At that moment, however,
a little logical thinking might have helped quench the growing panic in favor of a good dollop of common sense. For some unknown reason, people assumed that the White Knuckles had sped away with the regal white-haired lady toward Route 143, 3 kilometers east of town. In reality, however, the Olds had simply crept like a mutant blue snail some 90 meters around the northern tip of the lake. Meanwhile, a posse had formed to find the white-knuckled steering wheel, with my mom propped primly alongside, riding shotgun. As the misguided posse arrived at the 143, cars split up, some headed north toward Sherbrooke and others south to Stanstead. Now far beyond hysteria, Maisie carried her few groceries back to the nursing home to report the alarming recent development for which she felt sickly responsible. "You did what? She disappeared when? You left her where?" came the calming response from the Connaught's on-duty nurse. "Call the police now." Nobody had thought simply to drive to George's house or to phone him, even though his knuckles had been positively identified and everybody knew full well where he lived. Summoning the police into such a kerfuffle was probably overkill, but I'm only trying to relate what happened on that spring day. The crowd outside Joey's store had not yet thinned, rendering police work difficult, if not impossible. "Allez-vous-en, rien à voir site," they hollered to the assembled mob. "Rien à voir, rien à voir." Suddenly, a youthful voice piped up from the back of the crowd. "Why don't you just drive over to George's home?" The crowd reflected for a moment. Then the elderly gent, who had spied the white knuckles in the first place, helpfully concurred. "Yeah, why don't we?" As the crowd congestion broke up, a police car gathered speed toward Dreamland Park, lights flashing and sirens blaring. Just after careening onto the street where George lived, the cruiser screeched to a full stop. Two cops disembarked and scooted urgently to the front door where they rapped smartly with their nightsticks. George answered. Both gendarmes wedged their way past George into the tastefully decorated living room. With a warm blaze crackling in the hearth, a nearby mahogany table exhibited a fine-spode blue Italian teapot with an ever-so-slightly-tilted knitted cozy and two matching teacups poised prettily on a dainty beige Belgian lace doily. "Moudzi, c'est bien nice, sit," muttered one of the cops as his gaze took in the elegant tableau. The other inquired, "You are Madame Le Veron?" "Why, yes, I am, Monsieur Constable," replied Mum. "Désolé, Madame, but now we have to take you home to the residence. Please come with us." "Why, yes," my mother sweetly agreed. "That would be just fine. That's it."
And thank you again to John LeBaron for coming in and reading his story called "You Left Her Where?" Very good, very amusing. Look for it on our website under the interview section a little bit later today, or at least by Monday, www.cjmq.fm. Just go to the interview section. And John is from the writing group called Right Here, Right Now.